The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Are you making the most of your KiwiSaver investment? Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of strong long-term performance. Making a smart decision now could add tens of thousands of dollars by the time you reach retirement. Book a no-obligation chat with a Generate KiwiSaver advisor today at generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns.
No mai, hoki mai, kia ora fold, e mihi nei, ko Dangri, toku ingoa. I'm coming to you live, not live, from Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, where I've been on a sort of what my wife would describe as a jolly, but I would describe as a conference trip. And while I was away, as typically happens, some massive news broke that Melissa Lee, who had been broadcasting minister or minister of media and communications, gets got a unwieldy title, which I don't really remember, goes to credibility, had been summarily fired alongside Penny Simmons, disabilities minister, and ejected from cabinet. And it was one of those sort of bombshell things that the only way you can properly understand it is by talking with your learned colleagues. I didn't have that luxury. I had to just sort of sit and think about it and then do a little speech and make a sort of a joke about how things were going in New Zealand. So I've basically been away with incredibly learned and smart media people talking about the whole world of media, but not at all about the fact that our broadcasting minister got fired about, I don't know, 4 months into the job. And this podcast is me getting to talk to, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, I think the best person in New Zealand to talk to about it, Toby Manhire, my colleague, editor-at-large of The Spinoff, knows a massive amount about media and about politics. And so, yeah, why am I even explaining who he is? You all listen to Gone by Lunchtime. So, yeah, this is basically about the fact of her firing, why she was fired, what it says about the portfolio itself, and a bit about sort of trying to game out what kind of a minister her replacement, Paul Goldsmith, is likely to be. And then there's a little bit of what are you doing up there, Duncan, at the end. So hopefully it's a good lesson. I really, really enjoyed having the talk with my good friend Toby, and certainly like very much in the weeds of what does all this mean for us as media in New Zealand, and how might it sort of change the scenario that we're all going through. So yeah, this is Toby Manhire on the phone. Kia ora, Toby. Welcome to a little podcast I like to call The Fold.
Kia ora, Duncan. Good to have a synergy going here.
Yeah, this is amazing. I should say that the remarkable chemistry that we experience when we're in the same room is affected by the fact that I'm currently in Kuala Lumpur and you're in Auckland. So forgive us not having the quite the electric closeness that you might have expected, but we'll do our best.
It's going very well so far.
Yeah, I know. I'm really enjoying that. I just wanted to make it very clear that I am currently in a different country because, yes, as you know, incredibly important person. But what I wanted to talk about, what I wanted to start with, was obviously this. We've got a new minister now, the 29th Minister of Broadcasting / Media / Communications. And can you tell me how it went down and sort of how it landed?
It was on Wednesday afternoon, I think, just very early afternoon. Not trailed at all. I think it's fair to say it was unexpected. And Christopher Luxon rocked up to the theatreette and announced that Penny Simmons, the Minister of Disabilities, was being relieved of her responsibilities in that portfolio. And Melissa Lee, the Minister for Media and Communications, was both losing that portfolio and, which is a category difference, actually losing her spot at the cabinet table. So she's out of the cabinet. Luxon, you'll be keen to know, didn't say that they'd been underperforming, left that to be interpreted, but he did say, this is how I roll. And he also said, I want my aces in their places. So it's, you know that he's a country music fan, and that to me sounds like he is going to drop a new album soon. It just has the inkling of some magic.
I agree. And I think him moving from into that space, is, he needs to reset the narrative and probably like just some long lead promotion for his singles is a very good. Aces in their spaces, like I'm very, as you know, highly fluent in corporate jargon.
Mm.
And not partial to it, if I'm honest.
Aces in their but places, not spaces.
I've
aces
never heard it. I've never heard it.
I think he invented it.
It's brand new.
It's new. It's new material, as far as I know.
It's pretty amazing. But so going back to the sort of the landing of it, do you think it was warranted? Like it feels like I was like Melissa Lee is objectively being bad at the communications aspect of her job. But it didn't cross my mind remotely that this was a thing that could happen.
Yeah, there'd been some speculation about whether or not she was for the chop at some point. I don't think anyone was expecting it this soon, 5 months in. Announcing the two together, I think, is part of hoping that it gets played as a sign of strength and, you know, the CEO who wants his aces in his places and so on, which has largely been successful. I mean, some, you know, it depends who you read, right? Like Bernard Hickey this morning in New Zealanders, this shows weakness on Luxon's part. You know, it shows a lack of judgment in the appointments, and here are the examples of why. Matthew Hooton is full on loving it. This is incredibly strong and, you know, provides a signal, and it's that whole kind of puts everyone on notice. So there's that side of it. As far as the Melissa Lee part goes, the comms has been poor, but also there's, you know, maybe the performance. Maybe it is a reflection of performance. There's been some reporting, I think, by Laura Walters in Newsroom that she was having a third bash at a cabinet paper and that the Prime Minister just didn't think it was up to scratch. And that was part of his thinking that actually this is the wrong person for the job. She was, I think, really struggling for someone who has communications in her job title to do communication. She was struggling to do that critical part of political tradecraft, which is say nothing successfully. She was very bad at saying nothing. You know, she just, you could tell she was saying nothing. And while that might seem an incredibly superficial thing, it is kind of part of the job, right? To at least give the impression that you have things in hand, whereas she had that very strange kind of evasive quality. I looked up, she's described by various commentators as a deer in the headlights, as a rabbit in the headlights, and as a possum in the headlights. I'm not making that up. I did a search.
No way.
All those different descriptions in recent weeks. So there's a lot of headlights and, you know.
And various sort of mammals. Do you think which of those, possum, deer, rabbit, which is your sort of preference for what do you think really crystallizes
in terms
Melissa
of
Lee in this
a
context?
Better idiom, or in terms of which better describes Melissa Lee?
Well, of those three, it's multi-choice.
I don't know.
There's no all of the above. This
feels like a trap. I'm not going to walk into that.
See? That's better comms. That's better comms than she ever did. God damn it, Toby. You've wriggled out. From a pure kind of political perspective, because I sort of take as read that for Luxon, for his base, firing people is just kind of always hot. Do you think it was warranted, or should we have gotten the public a chance to see what was in the cabinet paper before, you know, the mysterious cabinet paper before she was fired?
I don't know that necessarily we should see cabinet papers before they're put to cabinet. I mean, that would be a bit of a shift in the way things are done. And probably most of that, it seems like, will survive in some form or other in Goldsmith's version. It is odd, I guess, in that normally what we have is a scandal play out of some sort. And I don't think you could say that Melissa Lee was embroiled in a scandal. What you can say is that she had broadly, I think, lost the confidence of the sector. And that matters not because people necessarily thought that she was going to be able to fix it. I remember at one point she was saying, you know, I don't have a magic wand. I can't just wave a wand and fix everything. And that's true. But I think what people want in particular sectors is to feel as though the minister at least gets it, at least sort of understands the issues at play. If you take someone like Mark Mitchell, I imagine a lot of the police in New Zealand are pretty mad with him at the moment because they're in a dispute about pay. But I think they would say that they think that Mark Mitchell kind of gets what the challenges that are faced by the police force are. And I think Melissa Lee probably wasn't meeting that very low bar.
So this is now the second consecutive government where the first minister fired is a broadcasting minister. And, you know, like Willie was probably the best in terms of like actually advocacy for the sector, but also like he was not without like a massive cache of like annoying headlines. Chris Farfoy was sort of there. He was very good at saying nothing, but he wasn't. He didn't seem to have his arms around the portfolio. Why is there something unique to broadcasting? Is it bad personnel? Like, what's going on with that portfolio?
Hard to say, isn't it? I mean, I would imagine that when a prime minister sits down, or indeed a leader of a party sits down and allocates portfolios for ministerial warrants or for spokespersonships, for portfolios, that media is not top of the list. It just isn't, you know? It's not quite one of the kind of lovely bonus ones that you get, like arts and culture, where you get to go to the opening night of the opera, or sport, where you get to travel around the world and cheer on our brave teams. But I just don't think it's high on the list. I think it's so I think it's not really been made a priority. And that probably has some impact on the personnel that end up in those roles. It's much more challenging than it first appears, I imagine, you know, because it used to be called the Minister of Broadcasting, right? And there was a time when it had its challenges, but at least it was basically you're dealing with the state radio and the state TV, and that's kind of most of it. And there are a few other bits around the edges. Now it's a bit of a higgledy-piggledy of all the regulatory frameworks and just all the things that people in the media have encountered, where you've got this fragmented, unbundled industry in a constant state of flux, in a constant state of being thrown apart by technological innovations, in a constant state of sometimes crisis. And so that makes it not necessarily, like makes it quite a tricky one to run. I guess the other thing to say, Duncan, is that it's a weird one because the people who are covering the story know a lot more than they would about, on the whole, on the average, about other sectors, because they are also participants in it. And it's that tricky thing where, to some extent, there is a risk of a conflict of interest in all of the coverage of all this sort of stuff. Certainly the Melissa Lee demotion has got a lot more coverage than the Penny Simmons demotion has, and now that one has its own backstory, and there were probably more clear kind of failures in that one. But yeah, it makes it a tricky portfolio because of all those things, including that the people who are covering the story are the people who are part of the story.
These are very fine points you make, and I compliment you for them. The thing I'm curious about, because like I agree with all of that, but I've also long felt like it was poor political management not to give it to someone who is at the very least kind of intellectually engaged with the problems and good at saying nothing, as you said earlier. Because if you look at the history of the portfolio, it was created in around 1930, in the 1930s. Sir Michael Joseph Savage was the first broadcasting minister. So he's prime minister and broadcasting. Then it's Peter Fraser, Prime Minister and Broadcasting, and it continues to be a very senior, like, important portfolio, at least up until the 80s. You had Richard Preble, who was kind of extraordinary at it, you know, invented New Zealand On Air, this decentralised public broadcaster.
He only did it for a year. He was only in the role for a year. That was the pace at which things were changing in that period of time.
Someone should do a podcast about that, is all I'm saying.
Someone should do a podcast about it, yeah.
But fundamentally, like, you can kind of see the status decay in terms of the people who are in the roles. And yet, because as you just suggested, it's a noisy portfolio, even if it's not an economically significant or a status or a high status one. Now that it's with Goldsmith, who's, you know, maybe the most sort of, I don't know, certainly like based on conversations with him, he seems to sort of intellectually engage with the quality of the problems. Do you think that does signal that Luxon and the coalition have kind of at least clocked that this thing is more complex and more important than it might appear?
I think that's probably true. I mean, we haven't even touched on, when we look at the different parts of the portfolio that are complex, the extent to which the role of the Fourth Estate, but also the rise of misinformation and all that sort of stuff, fake news, makes it so much more heated than it was before. I'd certainly think, I suspect that if Christopher Luxon had his time again, he would have realised that and would have thought, we need somebody who is an experienced senior minister. And he may have thought, well, Melissa Lee's been in the portfolio. She'd been spokesperson since 2017, I think. And I mean, it's a question for you, really. You've been close to this. Do you think she had her head around it and just had a struggle with expressing it? Or do you think she hadn't really got a firm grip on what the challenges were?
That is basically the kind of the core question. I think there were some aspects of Melissa Lee in opposition where it felt like she was much more engaged with it. In the House, she could be quite a withering and reasonably surgical critic of aspects of government performance. I think during the time that Willie Jackson was minister. But that switch from opposition to government is notoriously jarring, and it felt like she knew what she didn't like about media and government's relationship with it. But beyond saying that the bill is bad, it didn't feel like she had a kind of joined up, coherent alternative to that beyond it's the market, and that's a problem. You know, I think it was very foreseeable that something like the News Hub sort of event would happen, and the fact that she seemed to not have rehearsed any kind of response to it, both in terms of communication style and in terms of here is a legislative kind of panacea, is I think ultimately why she had to go.
I mean, it's media is one of those territories, a bit like sport, a bit like culture, a bit like some others, probably more than I recognise, that have attracts a particular level of nerdery, you know, a particular level of fascination with the mechanics of the sector, fascination with the innovations and the challenges and the disruption and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, when you talk to people who get that sports portfolio, they're so interested in what happens with New Zealand rugby, just as they are with the DRS rule and all that sort of stuff. In media, useful to have someone who just goes, yeah, isn't that fascinating what's happening in Canada, you know, and is just spends too much of their spare time reading it rather than it being a job. And I never really got the sense from Melissa Lee that it was something that really animated her in that way.
Yeah, I think that she got the portfolio on some level because she used to work in the media, which, you know, theoretically is a really good and a natural kind of qualification. But she worked in the media 20 years ago, and for a New Zealand On Air funded show, like the particular dynamics of media, the burning platform, the sort of, you know, I interviewed David Seymour a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about it being a sort of it's postmodern. And it's true. Like, where does media end? The fact that you can, like, Uber might get more advertising revenue than stuff sometime in the next couple of years. Like, it's just very weird as a portfolio, and you kind of have to have the whole of that in your head when you're trying to talk about it. And you're absolutely right, it didn't feel like you could get into what the sort of social business, all of the different elements of it with her.
So, like, tech, you know, for want of a better way of putting it, is an inextricable integral part of talking about media. And one of the things that is being discussed with the legislation now is AI. You know, being the Minister for Broadcasting had many challenges. The sort of stuff that's in the world of AI wasn't one of them.
Well, so that's interesting. That's really why I think it's a, because you can't conceive of the end of the portfolio. It's actually on some level the whole of the economy if you kind of conceptualize it a particular way. I remember asking
this is mission Will creep Jackson, on the part of the fold here, I think.
Well, it is.
It's everything.
Yeah, but notoriously, like, you know, our colleague Callum Henderson has made fun of me for that over beers. Media is anything that goes from one to many and you kind of can kind of consume. And, you know, like it is very fucking broad. I interviewed Willie Jackson on this podcast a couple of years ago and asked who the Minister for Social Media was. You know, in terms of the scale of the revenues and the impact of it, it's a massive sector. And who goes, mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's me. A very kind of a classic Willie Jackson answer, but also that points to the scale of the portfolio.
You know, I mean, not to be flippant about this, but you could, you know, there's now a portfolio for mental health. Arguably, social media should be part of that portfolio. But that's another podcast.
That is another podcast. My question is that this kind of mission creepy, where does it end, cerebral thing. Paul Goldsmith loves to play piano, genuinely seems to love to have a big think about something. Is he, do you think, the right person to kind of have at this?
Is he the Renaissance man of New Zealand politics now? He played piano on Queen Street, didn't he? Madeline Chapman, the editor of the spin-off, wrote about that. I think it was on Queen Street as part of the Auckland Arts Festival, which is actually very cool, I think. I would try to be cynical about that. I'm not cynical about that. I think that is extremely cool. And I don't know what the media equivalent of that is, Duncan. Maybe he has to come and host an episode of The Fold. Maybe that's the equivalent of playing a piano on Queen Street. But certainly
it's very difficult and it takes years of training.
Yeah. And you always wear a tuxedo when you do it, obviously. One of the advantages of him being in the role, irrespective of his particular qualities, is that he is in the kitchen cabinet. He has the Prime Minister's ear. So I think people in the media on the whole, not everyone, but many will think, oh, well, that's quite handy. It's quite useful to have someone who you don't feel has to go through loads of layers, that they consistently have the ear of the chair of the board. So I think that's something. I think also he's written a ton of books, you know, which is, I don't know if that's journalism, it's nonfiction books. The journalism adjacent, I suppose. He wrote a biography of Don Brash. He wrote a biography of Alan Gibbs, some of which I've read, which is quite interesting. You know, that's nerd behaviour, which I think is quite healthy. And what else? He's done commerce. You know, he's done justice. He had a bit of a pratfall when he was finance spokesperson under Jeff Collins. The other thing about him is that he's responsive. He is in the common lexicon, the fronts, as we say now. He's already done two or three interviews from Europe. He's about to go to Geneva to go before the UN Human Rights Council for that kind of annual summary thing. But that's good. I always found him, a few times I've talked to him, you know, responsive when you wanted to have a conversation with him. This is when he was opposition, so slightly different. But all of those things are useful. Also Taekwondo, I think. Is it true that he's a black belt in Taekwondo, something like that?
And Ngāti Porou, obviously.
And obviously he's a leading figure in Māoridom.
That's a joke for our listeners at home, based on the iconic Tover O'Brien package where it wasn't Amy Adams. Who was it who wrongly attributed that?
Nicky Kay, I think, who said he was a leader from Ngāti Porou. He does have family links to Ngāti Porou, so it didn't come out of nowhere. But he is firmly a Wanewi guy, and that is Ngāti Epsom.
I had a long chat to him at a NZ On Air event where they were launching a new strategy for music, and he was like there. I think Melissa Lee was there, but they weren't hanging out. Maybe that was foreshadowing. But he was like extremely like engaged with the substance of the presentation, listening hard. Not, it's very easy to be a government person that's just showing up, has a couple of beers, hangs out down the back and then says they did it. But he was engaged with it. He also wrote a piece for the Herald recently advocating for an arts and culture strategy. There's a kind of Chris Finlayson kind of quality to him in terms of where he sits in the current iteration of the National Party. Did you read that strategy? And like, I don't know, like to me when I sort of, I'd read that a couple of weeks previous and I was like, it's weird calling for a strategy when you're the minister of something. you should maybe have it. But that aside,
did he call for a big conversation, a national conversation? That's always a red flag.
He didn't. But it was very, I don't know, Hayden's piece this week about the Labour Party forgetting that they were in government 6 months ago. It had a little bit of that quality. It's like, you are aware that you're the minister here. And if you want a strategy, it's just, yeah, you can call it like it's dominoes. But just the fact of him having a big old thing. I don't know if you read that piece in the Herald. And
I haven't read it.
Well, that's my whole question. No.
Why don't you do the question and the answer?
Okay, I can do the answer. You're just willing to hang out? Mm. I guess...
That's what you do with these pods, isn't it? I mean, normally it's just you asking yourself questions and doing the answers. I don't even know why I'm here.
Well, it's just nice to see you.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Sorry. Karen, no, give us the answer. Right. Give us the answer. What was your take on that piece that you wrote with the agenda for culture in New Zealand?
Well, I just think that the fact of a national minister... Like, this is a sector which essentially hates National reflexively, and it can do exactly the same stuff as Labour and will be roundly critiqued for it in a way that Labour might have been sort of grudgingly applauded. And he seems to be sort of wandering into it almost guilelessly, but with a bit of gusto. And I just think media's got similar qualities, but from a very different place. But like you said, the fact of him being in the kitchen cabinet, cerebral guy. So I've been hanging out with this guy, Sam, who's got a media business called The Daily Oz, which targets Gen Z, so a little bit similar to a more geographically bound Shit You Should Care About. And he's sort of, and I don't think I'm betraying any confidences here, he's just constantly talking about the fact that Meta is about to exit news in Australia across Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp. You just won't be able to share a link. You won't even be able to, if you're a proper professional credentialed news organization, you just can't be there.
Mm.
But if you're an influencer, you can say whatever you want. And that is a question that is a consuming interest to Australian media. The Prime Minister is talking about it constantly over there.
Mm.
It's really coming down the pipe for us. And it needs someone of substance to sort of engage with it. And I'm not sure, based on recent history, that Melissa Lee was that person, but I do feel like Goldsmith, for a big, heady, beyond just the kind of core economic consequence of business of media as a business, there are other implications too. He's potentially ready for that. Do you agree?
Yeah, could be. I mean, I think a lot of that is underpinned by the fact probably that he is, you know, a classical liberal in that real mold. And because he's, you know, he's that bookie guy, he's that nerdy guy, he's kind of posh. And so he has undergirding all of that thinking and an appreciation of the role of culture in a society, the role of the media in a democracy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which is quite a useful kind of central pinning rail, I think, to the rest of the stuff. The other thing to slightly digress off this in terms of the role of politicians in the media, I've said this to you before, I think, but I really think there is a space in New Zealand, and have for some time, including the course of the Labour Party, for a opposition MP or a backbench MP or any MP who's just really interested in this stuff, wants to get their teeth into it and wants to start pushing back on some of these issues, start challenging some of the institutions, start challenging some of us, start becoming, I always remember in the UK when the hacking stuff was happening and various other things, there was Tom Watson, who was a backbench Labour MP at the time, and who just went so hard on the committee for, what was it, culture, media and sport. And there's, I just think, you know, if you're out there and you happen to be a member of parliament and you happen to be interested in media enough to be listening to The Fold, you know, grab it. It's right there. It's right there. And that's how these things sort of start to really become more developed and more sophisticated, I think, as discussions, arguments, debating points, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, in some ways, it's an absolute prick of a portfolio if you're in government. But if you're in opposition, there are really knotty questions that are quite hard to answer that sort of make it, you know, something that an opposition spokesperson should really enjoy. Hmm. And look, to be fair, it's still Willie Jackson in Labour. And, you know, even since I've been away, like, Willie's called and sort of tried to kind of figure out, this is prior to Miss Lee's sacking, like, he's deeply engaged with the substantive democratic issues of it. It's just that it's such a cake of different aspects.
And so this cabinet paper, which sounds as though it still exists in some form or other, the mysterious cabinet paper and whatever iteration it is, what do you think? Goldsmith's talked about level playing field already. Obviously, he's incredibly new to the portfolio and isn't going to put any detail or flesh on the bone. Do you think, what's your finger in the wind expectation of what might be? And are we thinking Cordia fees scrapped? Are we thinking something on rebates? That's an area that the production sector is pushing for. What's your, and then also, what do you think is the, whether the Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, is that the correct name of the bill? Is that got more legs, likelihood now that with a sort of more open-minded, a new MP, a new minister?
I, theoretically it should, but I feel that the thing with Goldsmith, and again, based on just vibes, the classical liberal thing, is that the Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, I mean, I'm a huge reader and fan of Benedict Evans, who's ex-Andreessen Horowitz venture capitalist, writes a weekly newsletter about technology and media. And he's an incredibly trenchant critic of bills of that nature. He calls them a link tax. They can be viewed that way. There is a sort of an inelegance about them. And, you know, like in Australia, they name two companies, you know, and those two companies have now, because this is the nature of business, there are probably four companies, maybe six, that you would name if you were doing it again. So I think he'll find that aspect of the bill a little bit small, you know, the fact that it sits right next to something that is of relevance to the production sector but has no visibility or kind of sense of the production sector's struggles. So if I were to sort of guess, I think it would, what's in the cabinet paper will I reckon the bill's dead based on this, again, on a vibes basis.
Dead bill.
But they will, yeah, dead bill. Just because philosophically I don't think it will mesh with his sort of view of government. And even if you did bother to read his art sector strategy, maybe I'm the only person who read his cri de coeur for an art sector strategy.
I've got it. Look, I'm not saying I haven't got a tab open.
Oh, well, that's half the battle. But the point is, like, I feel like he'll view those things as connected and want to come up with something which wraps it all. And if you go to something that wraps it all, I think the philosophically and certainly the ACT Party, the idea of just another rebate, you know, you start to erode some of the philosophy of tax that we have in the country. So I think it moves more into the kind of levy realm. You know, we're talking about, I don't know, like 2021 numbers, but like $1.5 billion going out in digital advertising. I reckon if you really had your head around it properly, it might be more like $2.5 billion. Amazon is a massive advertising client and so on. So if you can take as James Frankham suggested in that series I ran a couple of weeks ago, publisher of the Avenger Geographic, if you take a relatively small single-digit number of the total digital advertising spend, said there are these core democratic functions we need to protect, I don't know. I feel like that's more likely to be something that he has sympathy for than the sort of band-aid-y element of a of the bill. But there has to be something, right? Like, your response, the cabinet paper can't be empty at this point. So, yeah, very, very, very interesting.
Yeah, I half wondered whether an early version of the cabinet paper was a sort of you know, 7,000 words that ended up with, and you will now be allowed to place advertising on Sunday morning broadcasts. There you
well,
go.
This is the thing.
We've sorted it out for you.
We've sorted it out. We're going away for another 3 years. I mean, that's the problem with the whole Cordia fees idea. It's like, it is absolutely worthwhile. It's also a great solution to 2008's problems. Like, it's frankly embarrassing if you come to cabinet with something that is that small. And obviously the TV sector and the production sector and the streamers are really into it, but it's just all it does is allow you to kind of breathe for a year or two, and then you've got the same set of problems like hurtling at you again.
Hey, is it true that you're in Kuala Lumpur?
I'm going to turn around my laptop now.
This is great podcast. Wow, that looks a lot like Kuala Lumpur or KL, as I like to call it.
That's what we locals call it, yeah.
You're in Malaysia. What are you doing there?
I am at the WAN IFRA Digital Media Conference. I spoke and told the story of the spin-off to a room full of dignitaries and people who work in this in the sector in this vast populous continent. And it's quite cool because, you know, like, these are people who, like you know, they might be like the second biggest media company in Malaysia, and they've got 1,500 staff. You know, they're basically NZME for Malaysia, and they're like fascinated by our, you know, tiny little media company. And equally, they've done this enormous job of taking newspapers and radio stations and making them digital in a really, really different market. So you do learn like your brain gets very full very quickly in a place like this if you're a person like me.
And are the sort of challenges that everyone is facing the same from around the region? I mean, presumably there are some that are different, such as for the most part, we don't have huge overt issues to do with censorship, whereas they might be more alive in other parts. But broadly speaking, are people facing the same sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, there are some absolute fundamentals. The power of the platforms is really enormous, and the fact that the price of advertising is essentially it's a market-based commodity, and whether it's done on, you know, YouTube or Facebook or, you know, a Malaysian news site, even though one of those things has a very important role to play in democracy and a couple of those things are sort of not that. That's, you know, like we're the sort of CEO of Omnicom, just a giant media, global media group, was talking, basically lecturing media on how to sell itself commercially better, and she was dead right. So those things are kind of universal, but the government relations thing, like essentially what we've been talking about, is so interesting. I was talking to someone about that they basically come from I won't name the country because I don't want to sort of out them because we're speaking candidly, but they basically came from like an RNZ type organization for their country, and they do straight down the line news, widely distributed. The only thing that they have to do is when there's a change of government, they have to do 80%, they go from doing 20% of the stories about them when they're in opposition to 80% of the stories about them when they're in power. And that's not because they're in government, so they're doing more stuff, so it's more interesting. It's because it's existentially important to please the, you know, shareholding minister with stories about cool stuff the government's doing.
Mm.
And we, you know, for all our kind of complexities and faults, that is like a staggering thing to sort of process how you operate in that environment. This was like an incredible journalist. You could just tell talking to him, he understands the whole thing. That's the operating environment for them, is that you just, once there's a new government, on some level, they're your client.
I went on this media trip once to the States with the State Department, and it was interesting. There was an Australian representative there too, and she and I, unlike most of the people from Asia who were travelling, it took us a while to really get a grip on the different level of challenges that most of the people with us faced to varying degrees, from the level of supervision through censorship that they encountered on a daily basis. And while we aren't impervious to some parts of that, it is something that is very easy to forget, just how, for the most part, we can go about our business without thinking, are we going to in some way land ourselves or our bosses in trouble?
Yeah, it's funny, because I feel like I spend so much time in the micro of media and policy to the point where it seems like a given that I barely think about, that we have a free press that aspirationally holds power to account and can basically say anything it wants as long as it's supported by facts, like, and that has this integral role in the sort of superstructure of our society, or at least that's what we intend it to do. And that is, we act like that's normal, like that's water. It's not normal, and it's not water. And that's almost one of the most refreshing parts, is you get to be around people for whom that is the sort of signal challenge of the time, and the economic and the sort of platform based stuff is second order. Toby, thank you so much for coming on The Fold.
It's been a pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. You're going to go out and do some more networking now, I suppose. Is that what you're
You know, I love to network, but I actually think I have to throw all my stuff in a suitcase and take a 70-minute cab ride to the airport and listen to a draft episode of a podcast. Well, it's just some long lead breadcrumbing here. I might be listening to a lot more, Toby. I'll be talking back, but you won't be replying to me. So I'm excited about that. And
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Okay, you know, you do an outro. Sort of wind it all up in a beautiful outro for Te Ai here and the listeners.
Look, this has been a wonderful time here. We've really solved it, which is good, because I've been chipping away at this, been chiseling away at my the thinker as New Zealand media's rodent. And it's done. It's all fixed now. Good to have you here to watch. And this is the last episode of the podcast we're going to do, obviously, because it is fixed. Fundamentally, it's all solved. And look, it's been a great ride. And I've enjoyed having Te Ai Butler with me. Oh, media, I'm really sorry with that new contract that's signed. We obviously won't be fulfilling that. But, great time. A really great time. This is all not true. I'm just being a silly bugger. But yeah, thanks, everybody. And look, you've really dropped me in it, Toby. Ka kite anō.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Ai Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.